Queen Mother, welcome. Queen Mother, can you hear me? Okay.
I can.
Continue, please.
Yes, I'm here. It took a little minute to get in.
Okay. But
I am here. I'm very grateful to be here. How is everyone today? Thank you so much for having me. And of course, thank you to beloved Yeye, who reached out to me a couple months ago and said, Queen Mother, I've been trying to get a hold of you to be part of the Elegant Elder series. And of course, I said yes.
Fantastic. Excuse me. Well, thank you for saying yes.
Yeah, I'm going to turn the fan on just a moment, just so I can have a little bit of circulation going through here. But welcome to my temple space. And it's just not working. What is that? Just one more moment. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. Fan's not working at all. Fan's not working. Okay. All right. All right. I'm trying to find out exactly why it is that my fan won't work. But are we ready to get started?
We are ready. Yes, we are ready to get started. So with your permission, I'd like to introduce you and to share the format for today's presentation.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I am so grateful to welcome us all here for today's wonderful Elegant Elder Lecture with Queen Mother Amaku. Today's presentation is part of the Jambalaya Spirit Works course presented by our beloved Yeye Tish. And as she travels and teaches and does her business and fulfills her destiny around the planet, she has blessed us with the opportunity of connecting with esteemed elders to expand the territory of our spiritual consciousness. So today we have with us Queen Mother Amaku, aka Pastor Elaine Lloyd Nazario. She is an ankh-carrying elder, high priestess, teacher, and scholar in the Kemetic tradition. Her personal practice, Shenu Kemetic, is a branch of Kemetic religion. Queen Mother is known for her cultural reclamation research, including her groundbreaking correlative findings on ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs and European elder Futhark runes. Her additional self-created oracle systems include the Shenu Circle of Fate and Calvary cards. There is so much more we can say about her. Her bio will be posted in the group and shared with those women who have elected to participate in today's lecture. As far as our format for today is concerned, Queen Mother will come in her way with her presentation. We will have a dedicated time for Q&A at the end of her presentation, and we will proceed from here. So welcome, Queen Mother. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure and honor to be here. And thank you to all of you who are here. Queen Leia, I'm very grateful to you for your assistance and for your dedication to the work by helping the tremendous, legendary Yeye Louisa Tish in furthering what we do. And so I give kudos to you. But how is everybody today? Everybody good? Do I have a chance to see active participation, or is everybody just kind of laid back and listening?
Right now, the way we have it is everyone is on mute. Right now, you should be able to see all of the participants, those whose screens are shared. But if you want me to unmute people, if you want me to have an open unmute, how would you like it?
Well, let me get into it, and then we can do an open unmute. I kind of, I don't like being a talking head. I can do it. I have done it. I do it, you know, as a teacher and lecturer, of course, but I also do like feedback and to be in the here and the now with people and their questions. Certainly, we can wait until the end, but if there's something that's pertinent that comes up, because I'm kind of informal. I guess in a way you can tell I have something of a free-spirited way of expressing myself as an artist, but I am guided completely by my filter of being a Shenu Kemetic elder high priestess. This tradition has absolutely shaped my life, but I must say that everything in my journey has brought me to, or had brought me to Kemetic traditions. And I am very grateful for the vast and profound experiences that I've had, starting from the Christian faith, which I was raised up in as a Baptist, and then going through the whole born again, thank you, Jesus, hallelujah phase when I was 14 into my early 20s. But I got to a place where I just wanted to know more. And it was confusing to me that there was all this smack talk about Egypt in the Bible and amongst Christians, but it mentioned that Jesus came out of Egypt. And then as I was introduced to the lost books of the Bible, the Nag Hammadi texts, and found that according to it, that Jesus returned to Egypt in order to gain the wisdom that was necessary to begin his ministry, I said, well, that means there's got to be something that is good that is there. And I want to know what it is. I want to know what has been hidden, what we're being diverted from. And I just want the full truth from not only a spiritual standpoint, but from an historic and cultural standpoint. As people of color, as a Black woman, as a person who has experienced having our culture taken from us, as someone who is very dedicated to the reclamation process, I wanted to know. So I began my journey, and I ended up in a number of different places. I mean, I've been at Baha'i firesides. I've been involved in, the very first coven that I was in was a Brige or Bridget coven. And I was the only Black person there, and I kept thinking, I don't feel as though I've come home yet. I've been a Nichiren Daishonin Buddhist. I've been Zen Buddhist. I practiced Taoism. I thought that I had fully arrived home when I came to the Orisha traditions, and was very, very much in love with and dedicated to Yemoja. And Yemoja was very, very good to me. But then there came the day when Yemoja basically kicked me out of the nest and sent me home to Kemet, which I didn't appreciate at the time, nor did I understand. But I want to tell you something. The statue that I'm pointing to right here is of a force of nature, Netshurt, guardian, goddess for lack of a better term, whose name is Hat Mehit. And she, if you will, is mother to Yemoja. She predates Yemoja, and she is Kemetic. She is the oldest known guardian to have worn a fish crown. And her name means she who is before or in front of the fishes, she who leads the fishes. Her name also means she of the abundant heart. And her energy is everything that I found with Yemoja and more. And so basically Yemoja was pointing me back home to Nile Valley traditions. It's important for us to understand the historic and cultural significance of knowing the cultural origins. Now, just to be very clear, Kemetic culture is not just one culture. It represents the culmination of all of the Nile Valley traditions going back eons. And so you're talking about Eritrea, you're talking about Ethiopia, you're talking about Bantu cultures, you're talking about Nubia, of course, people know as Kush. And all of this has brought the wealth of knowledge and wisdom to the world. What you see when you're talking about Kemetic traditions is a fine unification, blending of all of these traditions of our ancestors. And these traditions taught higher civilization to the rest of the world. So that when outsiders came and tried to live amongst the Kemites, or even to visit for a little while, they found it difficult to fit in oftentimes because the standards were set so high in terms of cleanliness, science, math, the understanding of the cosmos in general, societal standards in terms of how to conduct oneself in the world, what was expected of you, so that there was order in society and not chaos. And not saying that there wasn't chaos, because humans are humans, but at least there was an established order that made sense and that also taught the rest of the world the high standard of how to be. So it has been, what, since the mid-90s or so, early to mid-90s, that I started learning a little more, digging deeper regarding Kemetic culture. And the final turnkey for me was seeing Dr. Ben on a show that was shown out here in the New York area called Like It Is. And Brother Gil Noble, who hosted and produced the show, brought on all these heavyweight scholars who taught the truth of our origins. And when Dr. Ben, rest his soul, we say Makeru after someone's name, after they have transitioned, if they have transitioned having lived a just life. And so with Dr. Ben Makeru, he started talking about how people in ancient Egypt, which was Kemet, which meant land of the blacks, looked like this. And how much of the artwork, as the changes took place historically from outsiders coming in, and the mixing taking place, and also the imposition of other cultures, that the art became whitewashed, okay, to reflect the changing color. But for thousands and thousands of years, the people who were in rule looked like us, which is beautifully affirming, especially after you have been fed a diet of gods and goddesses who do not look like you, after you have gone through a lifetime of being told that your history begins with slavery in this country. And we refer to people who were enslaved as enslaved Africans, because for people who are of a more present consciousness, we don't define them as slaves. We define them as humans who were enslaved, okay? Africans who were enslaved. So just so you all know, don't call our ancestors slaves. Call them enslaved Africans. So Dr. Ben started it for me. And I ended up going to a metaphysical church also, where they were teaching about Egyptology, and it wasn't jiving, but again, Dr. Ben and his teachings really started to open the door for me. Now, I can tell you also that my experience in the Kemetic tradition has been a rocky one. And that's because this is a tradition that is continuing to grow, as continuing to define itself and to figure out exactly how we should be in this present age. Because we're retrieving traditions that have been here long before we have, but also that we have not had access to, in the same way that the Europeans did when they went in and plundered Kemet and took our ancestors' belongings and stuck them in their homes and museums and private collections. So coming into a place of having access and learning the depth of the meanings of various things, it's been a process. It's been a growing pains process for those of us who are Kemetic faith practitioners and teachers. So there was a lot of abuse that I experienced, okay? Emotional abuse, spiritual abuse, and amongst the different groups, because we are just like any other spiritual group where you have variations of what the practice is and what it looks like to you and what makes sense to you. Our practice is Shenu. Shenu means the harmonious circle, and that's the vibe I come from, okay? And also with bringing everything full circle. Shenu also means personal accountability, and it is the reflective mirror of water, because we are the only Kemetic water temple that is in existence today. And that's significant because Kemet, since it was situated on the Nile, was basically a very strong water-believing culture. They depended on water for life. And going back into pre-dynastic times, according to the name of the sister who has been writing about Mami Wata escapes me, Maman Vivienne, I'm sorry, her name doesn't come to me, but in her books she talks about how the most ancient water temple and goddess temple that existed came out of pre-dynastic Kemet, and it was a Wajet temple and a Nit temple. And the fact is that ancient Kemet was matrilineal and matrifocal, and as the dynasties came into play, then more of the patriarchy took over, and so that was another influence that veered away from the basic foundation that Kemetic spirituality was based on. Someone was kind enough to mention my necklace here. Some say that it's Ma'at, and it's supposed to be pronounced Ma'at, not Ma'at. And this is why it's important to be able to read the hieroglyphs. Some say it's Ma'at. Some say that it is Ast or Iset. The Greeks called her Isis. Usually when you see the balanced arms like that, and when you see the wingspan like that, then yes, it is definitely associated with Ma'at, but oftentimes people associate this with Iset. Ma'at has the feather on her head, the feather of correctness and truth. And in fact, in my artwork, and this is where it's handy to be an artist, because if you don't have it, you just create it. Where's my Ma'at? I'm sorry, she's right there. Kind of hard to make out. She's up at the top there, kneeling with her wings spread, and it's also a Kemetic yoga position. So it's understand that the whole importance of understanding the matriarchal foundations. And today, I am also very dedicated to retrieving not only the matriarchal foundations, and understand that the matriarchy does not mean that the women are only in power. It means that women and men are together working side by side. It is a balanced society, which is Ma'at. And everybody understands their roles, and it's not necessarily stereotypical. If you have a woman in the family who is able to fix the roof, then so be it. If you have the father who is a fabulous cook, then so be it. But when you understand your roles in a household, in an organization, a family, in a temple, anytime you have a gathering of people or anything where two or more people agree, then there must be balance and order. And sorry, I'm getting notifications from people, even though I'm on the air. So, but for those of you who do have questions, please post them, and I'll be more than happy to to ask them. In fact, you know what? If Queen, if you can unmute and in about 5 minutes, okay? Because I'm just going to spend a little bit more time talking about the work that I do. I was talking about reclamation. This is a sample right here and an example. Most people would associate this with who? Eshulekba. Did you know that this is originally out of, you can find this as Besu, the door opener, the portal protector in ancient Semitic culture, who came out of Nubia. And there was a female aspect named Deset, who became Bast or Bastet, or also Pekit. But it was common for people in Kemet to have their version of a nurturing cup of Besu, a little statuette, by the door. Oh my, I need to plug in my phone. For protection. And he's a warrior, he's a trickster, and he represents protection during childbirth. He is known for carrying the knife. Okay. And wow. Maybe I should put in my headphones. Let me just plug in that way.
Queen Mother, we have a bit of feedback right now.
Okay, hold on. I'm not going to put my earphones on. Okay. And if the feedback is pausing the session, I ask you to unmute, then you can certainly mute and you can avoid the feedback, okay? Okay. Okay, you know what, we can continue in this way. We can go ahead and mute everyone and they posted about having a Bastet by the door. Who was that? And please tell me about it, and I can explain to everybody about the significance of Bastet in relation to Besu. Okay, tell me about your who you have by the door.
Hi, this is Nancy. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Nancy. How are you? Give thanks and pray.
Well, thank you. Greetings to you and to everyone here that are participating today. I just came back from Kemet, and I had such a beautiful, wonderful time. And I went to the different temples there, mm-hmm. and like I have a divine connection to Bastet. And it's like she had been calling me, a cat would show up at my house. So I was in Ross one day and she was standing on a statue by herself, like she was calling me, pick me, get me. So I did, and I got her and bought a little pedestal and I put her there right by the door. She is the goddess of protection, of childbirth, of music and love. So, I mean, I say hi to her when I pass by, and I also put Anubis and Pooh, the goddess of the underworld, and Pooh as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Uh huh. So just, you know, every morning when I wake up and the light on, or to turn the light on, I say hello to them and thank you for protecting my home. Thank you for protecting me. I even play music for them as well.
Thanks. Wonderful. So mm-hmm. let me tell you a little bit more about Bast, and I'm so glad. People just calling me. I am so glad that you keyed into the importance of putting her by the door. There are different variations of Bast. Like I said, her original name was Beset. And BAST, or BAST, you say BAST, BAST, BAST. And well, no, some people say BAST, but I found that in this case, the ah sound is very significant in the pronunciation of her name for metaphysical reasons. But she is a shapeshifter, as is Bes or Besu, or Bisu, some people call him. If you see statues or pictures of Besu, you see that he is depicted as half lion, half male. And he is a Dwa person, meaning he is a little person. The Dwa people were highly revered in Kemet. In fact, there is a sacred scripture about not being abusive to someone who was a quote-unquote dwarf. They were considered sacred beings. But they also, like I said, were shapeshifters. And so this is why you see the depiction where it's half human and half lion, because the depiction is of him changing form. It's interesting with Beset, counterpart, that she is not necessarily depicted as a shapeshifter, even though she is. But her, all right, so Beset is, she creates portals, okay? And her energy is more intense, as is true with all of the female guardians in the Kemetic pantheon, more intense than Bes or Besu, which says a lot because Besu is really intense. But she creates the portals. Besu protects the portals, okay? There is an aspect of Beset and that is even more fierce, and that is Pashet or Pakit. Back then, the SH and the KH sounds were often interchangeable and often depended on the scribe who was taking dictation from whatever priestess or ruler. And so the sound of it could be affected by the person's individual pronunciation. You know, maybe somebody had some teeth missing, and so what should have been a KH sound ended up coming out sounding like an SH sound, you know. But whatever the case is, the same guardian. Pakit, who is considered to be the original Black Panther, okay? And if you're talking about Bast energy, you're talking about Black Panther. And you remember in the movie, The Black Panther, they talked about using the energy of Bast, right? Mm-hmm. So the more intense energy of Pakit or Peshit or Pekat is the Black Panther that must be kept outside. Now, just like in Kemetic origins, I mean, in Orisha origins, you have Alegba and you have Eshu. Eshu is the more wild energy. And if you have any kind of statuary or, you know, to him, it must be kept outside by the gate of your home because it's too wild to bring inside. The cool down essence is Alegba, who you can bring inside. It's like that with Beset and Bast and with Pekit. Pekit is very difficult to bring inside. That's got to be some seriously contained energy. And you've got to be a really strong priest or priestess to be able to handle it inside, because it's like bringing a panther in your house, okay? She is known as the Terror, T-E-A-R-E-R. And she is akin to Maman Olokun, Baruku, the Swamp Witch. That's some serious, intense swamp energy with electrical storms and thunder and rain. Very intense energy. I have a symbol of her on one side of my gate outside and another on another side. But overall, here's what is important. And Bast. Bast is the cooled down essence of all of them. I have a relationship basket, a bast basket right there. That's for my husband and myself. And if you are seeking a relationship or if you are in a relationship, it is ideal to get and create a bast basket because she carries a basket and you put all of the beautiful romantic things in it that you want to see happen. So, and you also all the offerings to her. So she loves things that are refined. She loves things that are of high quality. So if you put some chocolates in there, you can't just throw a bag of M&Ms up in there. No, you've got to have some high quality, fine chocolate that you put in it. If you put oil in, it can't be some cheap dollar store oil. It's got to be some fine oil. Oil also is one of the powerful tools to be able to evoke and invoke her. She loves the sistrum. So you should have a sistrum in there. And the sistrum is to bring you into altered states because Bast is the one who takes you through the astral. She is the astral traveler and she connects you to the innocence of your soul. Bast, it is said that her name is Bast, which is the soul of Iset or Ast. And Ast also means the seat of authority, your seat of authority. And that is what is in the true essence of your soul. So she governs that. And she takes you on astral journeys through the sound of her sistrum that helps to put you into trance. She is the trance state. She is the good feeling when you go into trance, when you are dancing and you're feeling the vibe. She is that good feeling you have when you go into an altered state and you feel something warm and delicious coming over you. That is her. That is her. And she's getting ready to take you on your journey. Okay. So right there. So you have all these different aspects. Give thanks. Did you make your sistrum?
No, I didn't. I was led to order it. I ordered it. It has a picture of her on her.
I missed the last part of what you said.
When I play music and dance in my house, it's not me dancing. It's like something.
Bast, she's deep, but let me tell you, she's good time. She is sensuality. She is the one who really gets you in touch with that beautiful, sensual part of yourself that celebrates the divine feminine within you. She brings out just the true beauty of womanhood. She is protector of family, of the home. But she is also the one who is the hostess with the mostest. So she'll be the one to invite, you know, their children's friends inside, or they'll just know. She's like the Kool-Aid mom, okay? But also, when it comes to the adult situation, you know, she's the one who has the party that's the most popping in town, okay? She always wants to make sure that the champagne is flowing and the music is good and everybody is eating and everything's good and even the children are having a good time before they go to bed. That's Bast. That's Bast. She is beauty. She is aesthetics. She is the aesthetics of the home. Everything that has to do with the beauty of your home, including the soul of your home, because each home has its own soul that should resonate with you. And if it doesn't, then you either work to get it adjusted or maybe you shouldn't be there. Okay. But she is the soulful, sensual strut, okay? She is the divine allure. There is also a story that is so significant regarding Bast. Now, I'm going to share a variation of this story, okay? But this is one of these old stories that came out of Kemet. And this is significant on so many different levels. So everybody listen to this story, okay? So there was this man who had it all. He had a beautiful wife. He had a wonderful home, fabulous estate. He had beautiful children who were very dutiful to him. And he was seemingly satisfied, but he just kind of felt like he wanted more. And one day he was in town and he saw the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. And she represented everything that he ever dreamed of in his fantasy life for a woman. He wanted her so badly. He just wanted to just have the opportunity to just make love with her, you know, just one time. And then it became an obsession where he said, I have to be with her. I have to have this woman as my mate. And so he approached her and said, what must I do to make you mine? And she said, well, you have a wife. Yes, I have a wife. Go home and turn your wife out into the street so that she becomes a beggar. He said, okay, that's one. Okay, what's the other one? Okay, you have children. Go home and kill your children. After you've done both things, you can have me. This man went home, threw his wife, dedicated wife of all these years, out into the street, barred her from the home, turned her into a beggar woman. And then he killed his children. Went back to this gorgeous woman and said, I've done it as you've asked. Please, now may I have you? And she said, you foolish man. You didn't even realize you had everything. And she waved her arm. There was a vision. And he saw that his wife was actually alive. I mean, his wife was actually still ahead of the estate and the children were alive. It was a test, which Bast does. It turned out that it was Bast testing him. She revealed herself. And the way I seem to remember the story ending, he either died on the spot or he lost everything. I don't remember which one it was, but the whole point of it was that he had what most people vied for and didn't appreciate it and was willing to throw all of that away for a moment of lust. She tests you about your lust level because there's a fine line with her. She's all sensuality and beauty and allure, but then at what point does it go south? And that's your responsibility, not just for relationships, but also the things that you consider to be worth going after. Is it really worth going after, or is this all just based on a fleeting lust or something that's unresolved within you? You see? So ultimately, this is what Bast teaches you. She really teaches you to get to know your own character, what lies truly in your soul.
Queen Mother, there's a question from Davina. She actually has two questions.
How are you, Davina?
Davina, we can't hear you. I have unmuted you, but we can't hear you. Davina? No, we can't hear you. So Davina, keep working on that. I'm going to read your questions, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, we hear you now. Go ahead, continue. Just speak up.
Okay, so relating to Bast, my question was, I have her on my bedroom altar with Kuan Yin, and I was wondering, like, should I move her? Should I actually move her by the front door and then make a basket, like you said, and then put the basket
so, her? Okay, so here, let me tell you about Bast altars. And thank you for that question. So you have her on, you said it's a main altar with Kuan Yin?
But it's like, it's next to my bedroom, like next to my nightstand.
Okay. It's okay to have her next to the bedroom, okay?
Oh, okay.
It is good, though, to have something of her by the door, okay? It could be on a high shelf. Bast likes to be up high. She does.
Okay.
I need just a little louder. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. I was saying that I recently, I think last week actually, for some reason, something told me to move her to the bookshelf that I have across the room. which is a little higher up.
Yes.
So it's funny you just said that.
Yeah, she likes to be high. You see, I have my our relationship.
Yeah,
she likes to be. And it's not because, well, how to put this? She wants you to remind you to think highly of yourself. There are certain guardians of the Kemetic family that teach you about high standards. First is Nit, the grandmother of the Netchuru. Okay. Then there's Nit, okay, who really loves refined things. She has the red cloth. She likes white and red and gold. And everything about her is finery and abundance. Then you have Renunet, who is the Netchurit of the harvest. You have Heteru, of course, who the Greeks called Hathor. Well, they called her Hathor. It's supposed to be Hathor. And there's Anket, who is really refined. And Tauret. I'll answer the question about Tauret in just a moment, okay? Thank you for that. And then, of course, there is Bast. So, now, okay, let me just tell you something. Because again, we have the different levels of the astral that she takes you to. Mm-hmm. And it's important to pay attention to the signs and symbols that are all around when she takes you into these altered states. Mm-hmm. But the higher you go, the more your taste changes about the things that you want in life. So you may have someone who is very naturally sensual and may have their clothing like a little bit too revealing for this age, because you know in ancient Kemet they had sheer clothing, or women would go topless because of the heat, you know, and then would cover up at night. But for this day, you know, like where you've seen those sisters, all their business. The dress is a little too thin. It's a little too short, okay? Maybe they work in the office. I've seen this, okay? Where there was a young lady who was working in a law office, and nobody had the guts to tell her, you should go home and change, okay? You could just see everything, okay? But you could tell that she was a good person. As Bast takes you higher, then you have a new level of awareness.
Yeah, definitely.
But it doesn't mean that she stops being sensual. It may be now that she may wear something that's a little longer, and of course that, you know, it's not see-through, but she still has a little peekaboo with the shoulders, you know, and is doing it with class. Or she's gone from wearing cheap perfume to now wearing fine oil. And I'm not saying about going into department stores and spending gobs of money on perfume. But I mean, if that's your thing, that's your thing. But I'm just saying, she loves oil. She loves really fun, beautiful, fruity, sensual smelling oils. Okay? Okay. And, you know, so I showed you her counterpart here. But I do these. I create these. Okay? People order these from me. Okay? They're specially made. And I do invocations over them, and they come with a little cup that you can pour water into for offerings. But for Bast, I create jars, because the jar is hers. The ointment or oil jar is hers. And it will have a cat mask or face on it. And in it are bottles of really fine oil. And the jar itself is adorned with beautiful jewelry. And that's the kind of sorry, I'm just getting my train of thought back here. People are still messaging me outside of this forum. That kind of Bast is one that should be kept on a shelf. Okay. And I have my I have Besu by my front door. I have Besu by my temple door on a high shelf. I have Bast over here. I have Paquita outside. And I also have, in these doors that are open right here that I'm pointing to, I have my Bast and my another Besu that is in there. And when I do ritual, I play the sistrum and I do a prayer to them. I have the doors open, I kneel, I do my prayers and play the sistrum, asking for their protection. It's a prayer in the Kemetic language. I do all my prayers in the Kemetic language. And then after the end, either the end of the session or by the close of the day, I will close the doors. This was common in Kemet when they took care of the Necheru statuary. They would be in closed cabinets and they would put a seal on it every night just to make sure that nobody would break in. And the seal would be broken the next morning when the priests and priestesses would go in to do the new day's rituals, and they would bring out and adorn the statues. Okay. So I have mine in these shelves right here, but they're not on the floor. They're there. Okay. Any other questions about Bast? And you can reach out to me if you would like me to make you, you know, the Bast statuary with the ointments, and then also for Besu to go by the door.
Can you hear me?
Uh-oh. Barely hear you.
No, I was saying thank you. My other question was, what are the biggest differences between the Kemetic traditions versus the Yoruba tradition?
You know, it's funny because we get accused of being the snobs of the African traditional religions. but I found that when I practiced Yoruba, that the Yoruba temple that I used to go to taught about the importance of knowing the prehistory from ancient Kemet, and much of the lore is the same. There is the same distinction in how you carry yourself and with protocols. I would say that it benefited me in the reclamation work that I do to have gone through Yoruba first. Now, I was not initiated, okay? I practiced it independently. When I found a Yoruba temple to my liking, then I would, go by it. And I was saying that I found that in doing the Kemetic reclamation work, it is important to hearken to the Orisha traditions, because now I know there's debate about whether this is true or not. I will tell you what I was taught and what I've seen in my research, and also as a professional storyteller and folklorist and folk preservationist, African folk preservationist, that to me, what I was told from the Babalawo who ran the temple that I used to go to, what he said made sense. And this also jibes with the history of what happened when Kemet fell. When Kemet became corrupt, and that's when it was invaded by the Greeks, by the Romans, and then also there was a Muslim invasion. The priesthood went down swinging. There were those who were so dedicated to the culture that they were not gonna just be taken and turned into whatever. And they were not gonna be killed, even though a lot of them did. A lot of them were martyrs for the cause. Because at that time, it was considered treacherous if you were associated with the ancient Kemites, because they were trying to bring in a new regime. Mm-hmm. So there were those who stayed and fought, many who died, many who ended up being taken into slavery into Muslim traditions. And Muslim tradition is heavily influenced by Kemetic tradition in terms of praying five times a day, the cleansing practices that they did then, because they lived in desert culture, and so it was important for them to, you know, keep their orifices clean. All of these things that they learned from the Kemites that they captured. But what about the rest of the priesthood? They traveled into various parts of the motherland and the world. They changed the names to disguise the traditions, and so that way there couldn't be a connection, so they couldn't be hunted down and killed. But they knew it was important to continue the teachings and the practices. So that's why you see so many similarities in the Pataki and also in the Kemetic lore, in things like Besu and Eshu. So many things. Even in Buddhist culture, it's said that the Buddhists were actually the priests of Buddha were actually the priests of Pata. You find the same teachings, the same tenets. So to give a more succinct answer to your question, it's a matter of different names, all right? There are some practices in Yoruba that can be more stringent, but by the same token, in the Kemetic culture, we live by the 42. I'm pointing because they're up on my wall. We live by the 42 principles. And then also in my temple, I have taught that we should also live by Menku, which is about character development. And there are 60 additional principles that go along with that. And so the similarities, Iwapele, okay? And there is a term, Iwapele, Ipere, in the Kemetic culture, which is the building of character or gentle character, okay? So many similarities, and I think it's sad that we frown upon one another. Now, in ancient Kemet, they did animal sacrificing, okay? Today's modern-day Kemetic practitioners do not do that, all right? Okay. In our temple, we learn, and this is not frowning upon that practice. I mean, there was earlier this year, I needed to have something done, and I went to a local Babalao. I got a reading, and so I had, you know, something had to be taken care of, you know, so that's the way it goes, you know what I mean? So, because you have certain ancestors who need to be appeased, you know, I know I have Yoruba ancestors, you know, and so certain ancestors have to be appeased in order to move energy for you, and it has to be done in a way that they understand and also receive the energy, you know, with immediate action. Okay, so, and I'm not saying that I do that often. This year was a special year, and there was some stuff going on, and I needed a colleague to give me a reading. And unfortunately, my colleagues, a lot of them are no longer here. That's the hard thing about when you become an elder. You know, your elders leave. So anyway, so you all understand that this is not something I frown upon. It's not something I personally practice. But I know when spirit speaks, this has to be done, that, you know, it's important for it to be obeyed in order for your life to be in divine order. Okay. But I was saying, in my temple, our sacrifices are character building and community building sacrifices. In other words, we're talking about Bast. One of Bast's favorite sacrifices is for you to go and buy somebody a chicken dinner. Okay, somebody who's hungry, go stand outside a chicken shack, you know, see who needs, who might be out there begging, buy them a meal, or even go to whoever the next person is in line, just offer, you know, I just want to pay it forward. Can I buy you a meal? Okay, you can also leave chicken offerings, all right, at strategic places, but the idea though is that in doing service, because for us sacrifice is service. In doing service, it helps to better the planet. That's where we have the concept of being the ones we've been waiting for, our own saviors. You know, it is our just actions that help to elevate mankind. So you just have to look for what it is that each of the guardians ask for of you to do for somebody else in order for them to feel as though you have. I don't want to say satisfied a debt, but that you have understood and met the obligation. Okay, because usually you ask a guardian for something, and the question that immediately comes back is, okay, so what you gonna do? It can't just be where you figure you can just put your quarter in and get your gumbo out. Okay, you know, what are you gonna do? It takes work. Okay, that's just the way that it is in our tradition. I would say those are mainly the two distinct differences. I would also say that in Yoruba tradition, they are still in touch with the significance of the Bembe. That's something that I've been working to reclaim in committed culture, and I've been talking to over the last decade to a lot of the other leaders, saying this is something that we need, especially on a Saturday night. We're supposed to be doing our heaviest spiritual work on Saturday, on Saturn's day, because the energy that's churned up on that day turns into abundance. We have been talked into doing all of our praising and shouting on Sunday morning. We should be doing it on Saturday praise, prayer, and ritual in order to get what we need to succeed in this world. Sometimes comedic tradition can be just a little bit too refined. Okay. Sometimes, and this is why I personally don't hang out. Sounds horrible. I don't hang out with a lot of other Kemites. I don't. I'm known as a renegade wise woman for a reason. It is more important to be in touch with our ancestors and with the divine forces in the way that is the most effective for us, without worrying about messing up our hair or getting things spilled on us or whatever. You know, I've introduced the whole thing about working whites to people in my temple, simply because that was what I experienced when I was in the Yoruba temple. You need to have different sets of white clothes. You need to have the white clothes that you know you're going to get splashed on, okay, in ceremony. It's going to get a little dirty or whatever, or even a lot dirty. Even something you have just one time, and you know after that is done. You just, okay, that was your ritual garment for that thing. It'll never happen. You'll never see it or wear again. But then you have the other high ceremonial clothes. And so one of the challenges of comedic culture can be being too focused on it being in high ceremony all the time. And in truth, the everyday Kemite was not living like that. They had their own standards and practices they developed in their households. They did not go to temple like that in the way that we go to temple and church. It was during special occasions, maybe during quarters, maybe during, especially during certain holidays, holy days, and they were not privy to go inside. They had an area in an outside court that they had to stand at, okay? Then there was an inner sanctum for another level of priests to be able to do some rituals with statuary that the public could see from afar. But then in the back part of the temple, you had the closed off quarters where only the high priests went and did ceremonies in secret that were not, that the rest of the priesthood was not allowed to see, and also the general public was not allowed to see. So what did that mean? That meant that each household developed their own culture. So it was common to see Besu by the door. Besu was used to give to the children to drink their milk from if they got sick, so that Besu would heal them. The taboos in each household was a little different. Also, it depended on the territory that they lived in. There were different gods that reigned over various regions. Just like here, no matter where you live, there are different energies of spirit beings that guard the land and that live there that you must honor. So people's personal religions were guided by the gods or goddesses of their town, gods or goddesses of their town, by what made sense to them. Also, what they could afford to go and buy at the marketplace, because they had a lot of people who were crafters like me who would create things. But then you had people who would do their own handiwork at home and create their own statuary and so forth. And so it was more down to earth. The average Kemite could not read. People who had certain levels of power and prestige were given the opportunity to learn how to read and write. But for the average Kemite, a lot of it was oral. So there wasn't the whole thing of having to have saying just the right prayer and all of this. It was all very from the heart, very down to earth. Personally, that's kind of where I live. I love high ceremony. I do. I mean, listen, nobody does high ceremony like Kemites. I mean, we put on a show, okay? The original parades came out of Kemet, with all of the pageantry, with the whatever god of whatever season being floated down the Haiti or Nile, as it came to be called, in these long barges, parades of with barges going down and people on the shore waving and all kinds of stuff, or the parades through town. And during, for their spring rituals, they began the tradition of having white clothing, new clothing. You know how for Easter, for spring, the whole thing about going out and buying new clothes, that goes all the way back to ancient Kemet. And people, whether they were rich or poor, would have the finest or make the finest that they could. If the people who didn't have as much money, or if all they could work with was the flax, they would beat the heck out of that flax and get it as white as they could. It might have been like a dingy yellow, but that's what they had to work with, and it was brand new. So they were keeping in tradition because it was about the intention, okay? For people who had more money and they were able to afford cotton, which was considered rare in a lot of the areas and was actually considered an import, then so be it, okay? So I'm finding, because of the fact that where we live today and how we live today, it is important to know when we should really go in for the high ceremony and be in touch with what that is. It is not just form and fashion. It's not, okay? There's a lot more depth, richness, and heart that goes along with it. And also knowing when to be absolutely down to earth, okay? In Yoruba culture, I see both. And we're still working on that, on perfecting that in the Kemetic culture.
Thank you for that. Queen Mother, there's a question from Kahari.
Kahari. By the way, in our temple, we say Sharaim, which means peace and freedom. I know you hear a lot of people say Hotep. We ain't no Hotepers, by the way, okay? And by that I mean it's not about just wearing the jewelry and saying Hotep my brother. No, it is about living the culture. We call it living the culture. You can put on the clothes, you can put on the protective sa, as we call it, okay? Wear your hebes, whatever. I mean, but if your character is not right, it doesn't matter. Okay, see, that's what makes you a Hotepper. That means that you're just fronting, okay? It's a faddish thing, and you think that by saying, you know, Hetep and Hotep, and carrying an ankh or wearing an ankh makes you Kemetic. Being Kemetic is if you live according to the 42 laws. Gosh, the question was...
Kahari, please, you have the floor. Go ahead.
Yes, greetings.
So... saying about Sharaim, I was explaining about the greeting. Sharaim means peace and freedom. And I just want to explain that. That's distinctive to our temple, and other people are picking it up now. The word shalom and salam both come from Sharaim. Peace and freedom. I believe that people of color need to be invoking that. Hetep refers to the Hetep tablet, which is sacrifice. I think we've sacrificed enough. So we say Sharaim. So Sharaim, my sister.
Sharaim. So my question is about Torah, and the reason why I'm very curious about Torah is because at birth I was given the name Toriet, spelled T-A-U-R-Y-E-T, and both my mother and father have different recollections of how I got the name. They don't, but I came to later in life, it wasn't maybe only 5 years ago, when I was working with a spiritual elder, mm-hmm. and he was asking me my birth name. And so I told him my full birth name. He said, Toriet, as in Toret, the ancient Egyptian goddess. I was like, I had never made the connection. And now, mind you, I was a priestess at the Sarset Temple for like 15 years. Okay. And Toret doesn't come up in a Sarset ever.
I was with them for a hot minute. I left them. But,
okay.
Anyway, go ahead.
And when I researched Tourette, I was like, wow, those are all my blessings. I was blessed to have 5 children, right? And with those 5 children, I had like peaceful births, peaceful, pleasurable, even orgasmic births. So I only know about Tourette based on things I've read in books and seen online. So I wanted to know if you had personal understandings and insights.
Oh, yes. So we deal with, let me just tell you for myself, since I began this practice, I have dealt personally with about 100 of the Necheru. And when I deal with my students, by the time they finish with me, the longer they're with me, the more they learn about, because the Necheru, when they're presented to you in a truncated fashion, where, oh, here are these 11, where's the rest of the family? Okay? So, yes. So, your spelling of your name again, T-A-U?
I'll spell it in the chat. T-A-U-R-Y-E-T.
They gave you an amazing spelling of it, too. Because, all right. So, let's break this down. So the first part of your name, according to the way that it's spelled, because Tawurt, as we pronounce her name, Tawurt, she is the hippopotamus. She was feared. The hippopotamus was greatly feared in Kemet because it conquered on land and in water. It could thunder over you and kill you on land. It could sneak up on you in a stealth way and take you out in water. Let me break down about your name, though, because this is so very powerful. Generally, one of the common spellings of Tawurt is, I don't know if it's verse, but T-A-U-R-T, Ta or Ta, which is the land or earth, Wurit. The U is pronounced like Wurit, okay? And Tawurt, Wurit or Wurit means powerful woman, powerful elder, woman of wealth. So Ta also deals with the abundance of the earth. On the back here, these are the pictures of 2 fingers. This is another thing. I realize it's bleeding through, and that might not look too nice. So let me explain to you about the spelling of your name and what a gift your parents gave you. Okay, so you have Tau, which is the double land, but also the Tau is the cross. Okay. The Tau is the way. The way. The way. Okay. Riet, that's a variation of the name Reit, which is the female version of Re, who is much more powerful than Re. Reit or Reyet is, if you need to have an impossible situation overcome, that's who you call. Because her energy is just like, pfft, it obliterates whatever stands in the way, okay? So you have an extremely powerful name. So let me explain to you now further about Tawurt. The great Mother Earth. When we start studying her, I have my students watch films on YouTube about how hippopotami give birth, because it's water birth. And it's beautiful, it's peaceful, it's gentle, yes? And this also is an indicator of how ideally it should be when you give birth in water, all right? Where it is basically just seamless. Now, it's important for you to know that if you work with Tawurt, you should also be aware of the energy of Sebek or Sobek. who is generally feared, but because she is feared and he is feared, and they both understand that they can cause harm to each other, they respect and work with each other. Sebek has towards.
Your volumes.
Where he is depicted riding on her back in many pictures. So how is it that a hippopotamus is threatening to a crocodile or alligator? Well, they can crush their eggs, okay? So that would take out a generation. By the same token, a crocodile or alligator can kill a baby hippopotamus. So it shows the importance of understanding each person's function, or each energy's function, or each being's function, and how you can, when you work together, that you're unstoppable. So it's important, if you have a tawort altar, that you should also have Sebek there somewhere. It can be just an alligator statue, okay? A little alligator curio. I have two, in fact, because I have a knit altar on my warrior wall. Because I teach about, in our tradition, I teach about the warrior wall. We should have warriors. We do have warriors, and there should be a wall. So I have a warrior wall, and I teach that also. The top of my warrior wall is knit. Her two sons are Juju and Sebek. And so I found two alligators in Family Dollar. they were a dollar each. That were perfect, and I have them sitting on either side of a knit. So you can just find an alligator to have alongside, or you can.
I have one.
You do? Wonderful.
Yeah, I got one from when I visited New Orleans. I've got an actual alligator head.
Oh, wow. Okay, so listen, you know, my students that I have here in my temple. That's wonderful. So here's the thing, though. When you invoke Sebek, make sure you put him back. I don't mean the statue. I mean, when you call him, make sure that it's for a short, brief time that you actually really, 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 really need him. It's like, in case of emergency, break glass. Okay? And then when he has done his job, then you thank him and send him back. He's not the kind of guardian you want hanging around. You want him to just come, do his chop chop, whatever he's got to do, and then send him back, okay? But you should make sure that you invoke Tawurt all the time whenever you invoke Sebek. What a beautiful gift your parents have given you with that name. Wow.
Thank you for that. That was very insightful. I'm going to go back and transcribe everything you said. But I wanted to ask you about... Do you know of a relationship between Bess and, tell me how you pronounce her name, Tawret? Tawret.
Well, some say that,
listen, I need everybody.
You say Bess or Rastafari? Excuse me?
I don't, it's interference, I can't hear.
You're saying the connection between Tawurt and Bess?
Bess. Let me tell you why I'm asking. Because I was doing some spiritual work with a spiritual elder, and I was actually instructed on creating a dwarf shrine. And as I was creating the dwarf shrine, I was getting information about, it was taking me back to ancient Kemet to information on Bess, and when I was creating that shrine is when I was...
Uh-huh.